and then it starts to get rougher and harder and weirder. All right, kids, I hope you're ready for some fun. Let's get into it. It's going to get crazy.
The bondage was foreshadowed, kids.
Yes. Horror Movie Survival Guide is a weekly podcast where I, Gorehound Julia Marchesi, delves into my horror movie notebook to corrupt another one of my longtime chums, Terry Gamble, who is hiding in the creepy horror closet.
My mission is to learn the gospel of horror movie survival and to incorporate Julia's wealth of wisdom to become a final girl disciple.
Join us as we take a deep dive into everything from OG horror
to newly released films,
but prefer the classics on VHS.
We'll talk about obscure details that no one else notices.
Spin off into alternate casting universes, crush on some dodgy, foxy fellows,
and creepy uncles, and arm ourselves with the knowledge necessary to become the final girl.
Hey, everybody. So we have a promotion from Arrow that we're really excited to share with you all. Arrow has a streaming service. They also do Blu-rays in the UK and the US with really, really cool cult and horror titles. So you can get 50% off your first 3 months on Arrow with the code HMSGARROW, all one word. If you sign up today, you can get a full 30-day free trial, and then your first 3 months after that will be half price. So this offer is valid to brand new subscribers and can be only redeemed online at arrow-player.com. Terms and conditions apply. We're super, super excited to be having this promotion with Arrow because they have really cool films on their site, and we hope that this will help you find them out. Alrighty. Thanks, guys.
Okay, I'm blushing. Okay, we're starting this show though anyway. Hi, guys. Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am so excited to talk about this movie with you. I'm Terry.
I'm Julia. This week we're talking about 1969's Blind Beast.
She title said 69. I'm sorry. I'm going to be bad already? This whole show, already? This whole episode. I can't. Okay. I'm just going to give like content warning, parents. If you're listening, this is a very horny episode.
This is an insane movie. We'll be talking about some crazy, crazy, far out there BDSM nonsense. So hope you're ready for it. This title of this episode is Tactile Satisfaction. So this movie was written by, it was based on a story by Rampo Edagawa. The screenplay is by Yoshio Sirasaka and instructed by Yasuzo Masamura. It only has three characters. We have Makoto Doriyazaki, we have Eiji Funakashi as Michio, and we have Noriko Sengoku as Mom, and that's it. And I was like, I love it.
Three people. Why does it feel like there was more people? But that really...
Even in the beginning, when she goes to the art gallery, there's only him in there.
There's no one else in there. I forgot. Oh my gosh.
So, you know, Julia, I like people stuck in rooms and like small casts. And so this movie gives me a lot of that.
And we get
an introduction from the main character, Akishima, who's like introduced herself. This is going to be my story. And we get photos, nude photos of girls bound in chains. That's the first images you see. Really.
It's just bondage. I was like, oh, okay. Now I watched this movie at 6 a.m. in the morning. Ain't gonna lie. I woke up and put this one on and I was like, Oh, okay.
That'll wake you up.
Good morning. It's just like pictures of hot naked ladies in chains in very beautifully, artfully placed places on their bodies. And then a sculpture. And then you cut to a gentleman who is very into touching a sculpture in this art exhibit.
So there's an art exhibit that she's a model and she's been modeling for this photographer. This is the art exhibit that it's in. And so she went to go talk to him and found this gentleman who was caressing the statue. So the statue is of her that somebody else had made. So she said, you know, she's looking at him. He's kind of weird. He's feeling up the statue, a little bit strange. But then she says she can start to feel his caresses on her because it's touching her body just through the sculpture.
Yeah, and it's pretty hot. And he like all of a sudden, like the moment that she says that, though, it's right when he's like touching her boob and you're like, ooh, ooh. And she is taken aback by the feeling she is feeling. What is this feeling? Sudden and new. Anyway, she has a moment and she hides behind like a pillar in the museum. Like she doesn't want him to see how she's having a visceral reaction. I think in that moment, too, in my mind is he also has like feels this extreme connection to her, too.
Yes.
And they both seem automatically drawn to each other, like, uh-oh, they're going to have to meet up somehow, some way now as well.
She's such an interesting character because she flees after that. She feels that and she goes back to her house and said, you know, she had a really tough day. She had this long modeling shoot. And so now she's going to call in the masseuse. So that's going to be the end of her day too. So he comes in as the in call. Okay, here's a question. can you do an in-call masseuse thing that's not creep, not like a happy
Absolutely.
Ending?
Absolutely. I feel like massage culture is different in Japan than it is here. I feel like True. You go and get a massage after a long day. I don't think it's like has the same kind of connotations that we kind of have in America. Depends on what you do as well. Like if you're a model all day and you're holding poses and positions, your body is stiff and tense and weird after posing and holding stuff a certain position all day. You kind of atrophy a little bit. So I think that's just one of her normal things. Like she's like, I have a normal service. Like he even figures that out. Like she has a normal person she calls all the time. But he's found like, out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's not available. So they sent me instead. And I hope you don't mind that I'm blind. Like that's what I do. And I love doing it. And but she's being very harsh to him. And is like barking orders at him and is like harder, 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 like just doesn't, you know, won't let it go. And so
well, she's just letting him know what she likes. She likes it hard.
She does it in a, but like, you don't, I know. I see your face there. Like she's giving me wiggly eyebrows, but you don't need to be that harsh to your masseuse. You can say, do it harder quite nicely, but she seems to like to kind of boss him around. And so he's being kind of creepy and he's really rubbing her in places he should not be rubbing her. And so finally
the way he's doing it does not look like he's massaging. It just looks like he's touching. It doesn't look like he's actually doing any type of actual massage. Just like he's just caressing like her midsection really gently. And she's like, your fingers are too gentle. You know, this is too like, she doesn't like how methodical maybe he's being on her either.
So she finally is like, you know what? You know, that's fine. Get out. Like, I'll pay you your money and get out. And so then he takes out that nice rag full of chloroform that he had handy in his pocket and chloroforms her and kidnaps her. And he has, at first, because we didn't know who this woman is when we first see her, I was like, oh, he has a Renfield. He has like a little Renfield.
That's what I thought too. I was like, oh, he's got a maid or like a Renfield. Like, he's like some like, you know, yeah, I thought that too. Oh, so, we love Renfield.
we do. So he kidnaps her and brings her to this room. And man, okay. So 1969 Japan is great. I mean, this movie already right from here. Like, I mean, obviously you're getting women in bondage immediately. So you're like, okay, this movie's going to take us on a journey. Then we get this room that is one of the craziest sets I have ever seen in a film. Wow. It's walls full of giant body parts. So you have giant a room, like a wall of eyes, a wall of ears, a wall of tits, a wall of legs, a wall of ears, like all of these things, but they're huge and surrealistic and creepy and just
the way scale too, of all of them. Too it's big. Too much. It's too big. It's overwhelming. So, and it's definitely a place where you can tell because he's blind and you find out that he's made this room. Everything is tactile. So it's like you could go up if you were blind, it probably wouldn't feel like an overwhelming room.
Right.
Do you know what I mean, though? If you were just going in there and touching things one by one and exploring each one of the caresses and folds and pieces of each one of these, you know, appendages that he's had isolated on different walls. So but seeing like a wall full of just ears of that size that are like the size of a human body. Yeah, it's kind of creepy just seeing like boobs hanging on a wall, just random boobs.
All different shapes and sizes. And obviously, mm-hmm. like, you know, he's done much research and this kind of thing. But then she realizes what she's laying on are these two giant women's bodies, like one on its stomach, one on its back. And she's just like laying on its stomach. It's enormous. Like the scale of this room. I can't
it's like
imagine.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or whatever.
It
you
is.
Know, like the scale of the things. That's like, I'm trying to like get like, so people know like the
how
size.
Enormous everything
yeah,
is.
Yeah. It's so it's like they've fallen. She's fallen into this cavern of just like body.
I mean, what a budget for sculpture in this movie. Whoever mm-hmm. was sculpting, well done. I mean, it's all beautiful. It's really well done. It's just very unsettling. So, you know, he comes in and she starts freaking out because obviously you're in this terrifying room. You've been kidnapped. You don't
know
where
you are.
Well,
she wakes up in this room. So yes. This is like, imagine like you think like you wake up from being chloroformed into like a nightmare. And it's like, no, this is like, I did not even imagine dream. And this is worse than a nightmare.
To be fair, though, last week in Deathline, we had the woman waking up in like the raw meat room where you're like surrounded by dead bodies.
Yeah.
I would much rather wake up in this room. Like it's surrealistic and terrifying, but there's nothing gross about it.
100%. Yeah, this is like I'm in like a Robert Wilson play or something. Like I feel like I'm in like, you know, some like avant-garde performance from the 60s. And yeah, the other one would be just truly terrifying, but still also weird. Again, if you wake up and that's like, I'd be so like, I don't know, just off kilter. Like you don't know which way's up or down in that room. Like it's mm-hmm. very hard to tell. It's also very dark because he doesn't need light because he's blind. So he doesn't really leave lights on in there. So it's like a very dark room, but all you is just everything around you is just the wrong size and scale.
But he comes in and he's quite calm and kind of just trying to explain to her what's going on. And of course she's panicking and running. And he's just saying, you know, this room is just like, I want to feel women's bodies and I recreated them so I could touch them anytime I want to.
Touch is the only sense that he finds joy and amusement and pleasure from. He talks about, cause he talks about the other senses and this is the one that is the best for him.
So he has this idea that he wants to, he has his life mission is to create this new genre of art for the blind, by the blind, and pioneer the art of touching. So he says, you know, I'll be your slave. You could do, you know, I'll do anything you want, but I want you have to pose for me. I want you to pose for the statue. It'd be like my ultimate pinnacle piece of this statue of your body. And she's like, nope, not going to do it. He's like, well, I'm not gonna let you go until you agree. Like,
well, when she tries to get out of it by negging him and being like, I don't think your art's very good. Like the other guy, Professor Yamahama, was like, was so much better. And like, he's actually an artist and he's, you know, got style and he's reputable. You're not reputable. I don't trust you. I don't like you. Obviously, like, you kidnapped me. So he's like, but I kidnapped you because you wouldn't say yes. I knew you wouldn't. So I had to do this. And this is the only way to get you here. And you're like, oh, no, guy.
So
he does not have any people skills, this poor guy.
No, you know, he's clearly not been around people at all. So he says she gets so panicky that he's like, well, I'm just going to chloroform her again, knocks her out again. Wake up the next morning where she is at breakfast and is, so she realizes, you know, as you would in these kind of mental, you know, you mentally go through, how am I going to get out of this? What are my choices? What are my options? How do I do this? So the next morning, she plays a little cheerier and says, you know, she thought it over and just realizes, like, if you let me go, I'll do it. Like, just let's do this. And then if you let me go, he's like, yeah, of course I'll let you go. And you're like, these are the problems with these situations. Cause like they say they're going to do this thing, but you're like, well, I can't trust you because you're a kidnapper. So yeah, but what other option do you have, right?
Yeah, you have no other recourse really at this point. So it's like, okay, well, I guess like I'm stuck here. And she even tried, you know, when she first attempted to get out and everything, it's like the doors are double steel. So like, even if she screams and yells, no one will hear her. And he tells her, we took like a bunch of taxis to get here and we switched a bunch of times. So no one driver knows how to get here. And then we walked the last in here and you in here the last bit. So literally we're in the middle of nowhere. No one knows how to find you. And then also outside, it keeps getting colder and colder as they pan outside. It feels like it looks like snow is coming. So you're stuck in the middle, like in the countryside in this crazy studio where no one can hear you scream. No one can hear you yell. Nobody's coming for you.
Right. And all she has to wear is like a negligee, a small coat and some flats. And you're like, it's going to be bad. So yesterday she was trying the negging route. Didn't work. Today we're going to try the flattering route and just talk about, oh, you know, it's very beautiful. So we get the starting to create this statue of her. So we just start out with this very like crude lump of clay where he's starting to like bring her body out of. So it's a very beautiful, like watching this sculpture come to life, even though the sculpture itself is quite unsettling and not
the position
really
that he has her in. Yeah. Because if he was able to see, I feel like he would do other things aesthetically, but he is making different choices because he's blind, of choosing her body in really tense kind of motion. So it looks like she's falling like out of the sky or something, like ultimately like the sculpture as it comes to life.
Yeah, like her on her back with her arms and legs spread, but not in a sexy way, but just kind of in a
tense and flailing, like you're falling.
Yeah, like you're falling way. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, he's just talking about, you know, how much he loves her body and her body's perfect and she's been searching for this perfect body and like her skin is so beautiful. So she's, you know, playing along and then she's like, well, you know, I don't feel very well. Can we stop? And then goes into like, maybe you can go get me some aspirin. I really don't feel well. Can you go get me something? But of course, this is her attempt to escape. And she almost gets out. But mother is there at the door and that catches her and brings her back. And I mean, they live in, it's a very small place. It's just basically one room of like outside of where like the mom's living. And then there's this giant fucking studio. So, and he, you know, they have this very creepy relationship where she's like, you know, I'll do anything for you. You just concentrate on your work, like everything else I'll take care of. And don't worry about it.
She wants joy for him because she's just like, a mother would do anything for her son, basically. She's this ultimate crazy mom who is willing to do literally anything, including aid and abet and kidnapping of this woman for her son's enjoyment.
And she seems so rational and reasonable and quiet and like unassuming. And you're like, oh, mom.
You're like, so they've probably done this quite a few times, though, is what it looks like based on this room and based on the stuff that he has, the studies he has, because there's so many different models and pieces, right, and stuff.
But too. he also said that he went to massage school specifically because he wanted to touch women's bodies, and like that was the whole plan. And so he could have this resource to pull from of all of these body parts.
Yep.
So we find out that the mom raised him alone and that he has never been with a woman. So she's like, oh, well, if you've never been with a woman, maybe we could play that card. So she tries to get him to sleep with her by getting him really drunk and pretending that she likes it, and lets her feel him up. And it's like, I'm your one and only, and I love you. And like, she says, I love you. And that's when it's too far. And he's like, oh, it's a joke. Oh, you're lying.
Yeah, she pushed the ruse in that moment for sure. And he's like, I don't trust you. You just tried to escape and my mom caught you. So I know you're just saying that. Like, I know that you're playing me now. So I'm getting wiser. Like, he was like, first time, shame on me. Like, this time, no. Like, I will not listen.
Because he's so, you know, socially uneducated, right? He only has ever been hanging out with his mom. So he doesn't have that backlog of street smarts to pull from, where you would realize
zero
somebody's
social cues.
And, you know, and obviously he can't see her face. He doesn't know her facial expressions. So it's all just coming from what she's saying.
So her face is constantly telling us, the audience, dear audience, the truth of like, oh, no, like I'm lying through my teeth right now. You know, and you can see her working him and trying to like, you know, work these angles. He's not buying it.
Mm-hmm. No, even though, you know, she knows that he's never been drunk before. So she thinks like this is the way to get it out. So then she's like, oh, well, nobody's kissed you before. So like, the moment where she's like, he's like, oh, no, you're lying. And she's like, oh, am I? And starts to kiss him. And he's never been kissed before. And so he's kind of punch drunk by that. And he says, tongues are more sensitive than fingers. Like, yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. That's how babies learn so much, and, you know, throwing all that stuff in their mouths that whole time.
Yeah.
And that sensation, like, I could tell you, like, oh, my gosh, what does that piece of wood taste like? And you already have a sensation of it in your mouth just because that of childhood. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, or that plastic, anything around you. But mom walks in on this kiss, and she does not look happy about it.
And because especially because Aki sees mom and keeps kissing him and is like, oh, now I see another card to play. Now I see mom's jealous. How can we put this to our advantage? So this is the thing, you know, we talked about in the last couple of weeks, we talked about toolbox murders where we had a kidnapped girl. We had Patricia in Deathline, where we had a kidnapped girl. And now here in Blind Beast, we have a kidnapped girl. And you have, you know, the whole thing of it is, how do I, you know, mentally, how do I get out? Like, you know, physically you're overpowered. I can't get out that way. How can I get out mentally? And I think it's very interesting to watch each girl's different approach, right? Like, you have to, you say, okay, this approach didn't work. I'm going to circle back and try this and try these different things.
Where am I going to get leverage? Absolutely. Yes. And that's like what you would be doing, final girls, you know, as horror movie survival guide ladies. It's like, okay, got to figure out the angle with your kidnapper, right? So
can I just mention though, if we're speaking about final girl moments, she had a wine bottle that she didn't, I'm like, just fucking break that bottle, stab him in the throat, and you're good to go. Like, you can get out of that. Like, or just hit him with the bottle. Like, either one. I was like, you don't, but she doesn't do it. I was like, you have a weapon. All you need is a weapon. That's all you need.
I think she's also strangely still kind of fascinated.
Yeah.
Honestly. As much as she's trying to get out of there as well, too, I still think she's got a little bit of morbid curiosity about what he's going to be doing. And she's got that little bit of vanity, I think, too, as that model that kind of wants to see what he's going to do, but also is ready to leave. It's weird. I think this is where it starts. I think that's partly where that dinner, as much as she affected him, I think he might have affected her a little bit, as he was just like, you know, talking about kind of his dreams, and, you know, they're sharing, you know, a little bit more intimate details about their lives. And he is kind of like a little bit of a pure soul, even though he's a kidnapping pure soul. But he's just like, he's this adult man who has not been able to like be an adult, really. Like, his mom has not let him be independent truly. Yeah. And I think he's really suffered for that in this moment. And I think maybe she feels just the smallest amount of empathy for him, even though she's also repulsed by it at the same time.
Sure. And we're getting a little Stockholm syndrome going on already here, right? It starts pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So mom's not happy. Mom knows that she is a threat to her, and she doesn't like the way she knows she's going to hurt her son. So mom in the middle of the night gets up, gets her stuff, and is like, all right, get out. You're free to go.
Well,
go.
After they've been making out all night and he stays up till dawn sculpting, she's like, you need to go to bed, Michio. Like, you need to, like, not be up late. Like, he's like, Mom, I'm invigorated. I'm excited. He's like, I finally kissed a woman. You know, like, he's got that, like, new, like, glow about him. And he is very much like, I feel alive in my art for, like, the first time. So you can see him, like, coming to life, right? And so he stays up all night, and finally she gets him to go to bed because her whole plan is once he's finally asleep, she's going to let this girl go.
Yeah. So she's like, get your clothes on, let's go. And she thinks, you know, first Aki thinks it's a trick, and she's like, no, let's go. Like, you're getting out. So again, almost get out. And then he's there and, like, realizes what's happening. So this scene is incredible because you just have three people in this small space, and it's just everybody's turning on everybody in different points. And, like, Aki's kind of pushing the knife into both of them and seeing how she can use the weakness for her advantage. It's really, you know, because you not only have them physically fighting, like, Mom and Aki have a fucking fight. She's like, die, you bitch. Like, crazy fight. And you're like, damn, though.
Mother versus lover. And it is a good old battle. Like, it's like a final boss battle moment for sure. It is. And so...
And she, you know, she's also getting pleasure of watching them fight, right? Because she's making them fight with each other. And, like, you can see on her face, she loves it. Like, loves watching.
She's like, oh, it's working. Okay. Because they're now against each other because he, you know, Sumichi, like, you know, stands in front of that door and stops them from leaving. And then, like, you know, they have, like, knockdown drag out with each other. And Mom's trying to strangle Aki. And so it's like she's literally trying to kill her. And so he's able to fight her off. So he's fighting, trying to save his lover right now. And Mom is livid about that. And so, yeah, you can definitely see that turn.
Yeah, because she, you know, she's like, I've sacrificed my entire life for you. And, like, all I'm asking you is to get rid of this girl. Just get another one. We'll get another one. Like, there's plenty of them. And he's like, no.
But she also tells him, she's like, I know this one doesn't love you. I can see it. I'm your mom. I see it because you can't see it.
And she also
does not love you.
She says, she calls her a slut for posing naked and says, you call it art, but it's just greed and grasping for fame. And Aki's face when she says that, because it's so fucking true, is like so hurt by it. It looks like she's been like slapped in the face. Like, it's so on point. You're like,
that's why I think she was still there, though, because I think she wanted to see how it came out, because as much as she hated being there, she's also has that weird fascination with wanting to see herself immortalized in this sculpture. And if he is able to be the next great sculptor or create some great art, then she'll be a part of that fame for sure.
Right.
But then Aki just as well tells the mom, like, you subbed in your son for your husband and a lover. And this is all you have is this. And you're jealous of me and him wanting something else. Screw you. And that cuts Mom as well. Same thing. Like, those words lash her.
So they end up having a straight out cat fight where Mom is on top of her, choking her. And so Michio, of course, can't see. So he's coming over and kind of grasping, trying to figure out what's going on, and ends up shoving his mom off of her a little harder than he should have. And he ends up, her head hits the back of the wall and it kills her. And she's dead immediately. And so now he just loses his fucking mind, because that's the only person he's ever known his entire life. And he just killed her. And he didn't mean it. But of course, Aki takes this moment to be like, oh, he's distracted. Let me just take on over.
Amble out of here. But she should have been looking where she was going. She was looking too much back at him to see if he was going to notice that she was walking away, that she runs into some cans that are clank, 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 clank sound. And it draws attention to her right away. And he's like in a state of despair, but also just like, oh my God, are you going to leave me right now? This is the moment you choose to leave. You just said you loved me. And then he freaks out because he's like, my mom was right. Like, it's the turn of the turns are so fast right here. Yes. This whole scene, right? Because it is like, you hate me, I hate you. Like, who's telling the truth? Who's not? Who's like, who's using who? Who isn't? And then all of a sudden he's like, wait, my mom was right. You were using me. You lied. Oh no, and I just killed my mom. Or did I? Because he can't see. He doesn't know if maybe it was her. Like,
yeah,
he's like questioning that too.
Yeah, he's like, you killed my mother. It wasn't me. So they end up having a bit of a battle in their room. And again, horror movie star, that guy tip, she hits him in the head with a shovel and like smashes him enough to bleed. And then she drops the shovel. And I was like, dude.
But also he looked unfazed though. She slapped him with the shovel and he did not flinch, even though he's bleeding from his head now.
Like, just keep horror movie survival guide tip. If you get a chance with an instrument to smash your killer, just keep going. Just keep going until they're dead. keep going. So then he grabs her, takes her back in the room, and is like, okay, in place of mother, you're going to be here until you die because you got to take care of me now. That's the deal.
Yep.
Like, okay. So he, and, you know, he was saying like, you didn't think I was a man, and you keep saying that because I hadn't slept with my baby.
So content warning, kids, a little rapey right here now too.
Not a little, a lot.
Full on.
Yes. So we skip ahead where they have buried his mother under the floorboards of their place. Seems like a bad idea.
Well, it's also because it's snowing outside and it's like a blizzard basically outside. Oh, yeah, so it's 3 days later. Yeah, you can't bury anybody outside in the snow like that. At least they couldn't. I don't think they would have had the strength, and he was worried that she's going to run away. So he's got to keep her in there. So they just bury her by the kitchen and underneath the floor, shallow grave. And now the Stockholm syndrome is official. She's like, well, actually, now that I've been here and you've been, now she calls it making love to her. And I was like, I don't think that's what it was. I feel like I'm feeling a certain kind of affection for you now. And it's like, ooh, this turned.
Yeah. Okay. This movie, like up until this point, is one movie and turns now to be almost a completely different movie, which I was not expecting at all.
But it was foreshadowed. It was foretold from the beginning, I think, from that very first scene.
Yeah, you're very right. So she's, you know, she's saying she has affection for him, and that, you know, by the time the sculpture's all finished, like she's in love with him. So they, you know, and it's something where like they were both virgins. And so now they're just like going bananas, as you would, right? Like you lose your virginity with someone, you're like, oh, great, we can do this all the time. There's nothing else we have to do. Fantastic. Let's fucking do it.
And they have nothing else to do. There's nowhere to go. It's snowing outside. They're trapped in this big old room full of body parts, and he doesn't ever turn the lights on. So they just are constantly doing it. And then because they never turn the lights on, she's like, I can't see anymore. Actually, a few days later, she starts going blind herself now. And as she goes blind, her other senses get ratcheted up because they're just like in a sea of constantly making love now. And she's addicted to the ecstasy.
Yes. So it's, she says, you know, they start out quite normal, right? And then it starts to get rougher and harder and weirder. All right, kids, I hope you're ready for some fun. Let's get into it. It's going to get crazy.
The bondage was foreshadowed, kids.
Yes. So it first starts where she wants him to bite her and make her bleed, which he does. And she talks about how good it feels. So then they start to like bite and drink each other's blood as part of their sex.
Lovemaking. Yeah, that's part of it now. It's like, I want it harder. I want it harder, harder, harder. I want to they would like literally want to consume each other now. And so they literally are biting, clawing, beating. Then eventually we get some whips. And then she says, the more I suffered, the more I craved. And she talks about the sensation and pleasure and like, are we masochists next? And then she calls for the knives.
Yes. She's like, we had all sorts of devices to simulate each other. And they do this pan of instruments of like, in any other horror movie, they would be the torture devices. And you're like, oh no, I don't want to be near those. But at these, they're all the sexual like devices. And you're like, oh no, I still don't want to be all near those. They look terrible. But yeah, we started getting into knife play where like they want to cut each other. And at first it's just kind of like, oh, a little slicey slice, a little stabby stab. And she's like, no, no, do it. Like fucking stab me, turn that knife while it's inside. I love it. The ecstasy, the agony, all together, one delicious bundle of sex.
And she's like, more, more, more. I don't care if I die. Just give me more. And she's like literally consumed now. And they go further and further. And like she said, drinking each other's blood. And the stench of mom now is also overwhelming the house. So, uh-oh.
Yes. So that's not a good thing. But they're just in this crazy place where there's no one else and this is all there is, and like because this all they can do is feel, this is the thing, you know. And that she talks about now how happy she is that she's gone blind and how seeing people could never know the ecstasy of only having senses of touch, and how she can almost taste him with her fingers, and it's this incredibly beautiful thing that she loves. So she's turned from this, you know, kidnapped victim to somebody who's becoming him almost, in feeling like a thing that he's feeling.
They really do share that bond. Oh, bondage. Okay. Anyway, but they really do. And she's like talking about how she feasted on bliss and how like Julia said, yeah, she's just never known that before and didn't know it could be this good. And everything that she had been poo-pooing earlier about like, oh, this could never be an art form, or what do you mean touch? How could that be that sensational? And it's like now she's completely on the other side of that.
So because they have been doing nothing but smashing and also, you know, hurting each other for quite some time now. Yeah, a long time.
Had not been eating. They're like famished.
No, they've been drinking each other's blood. That's it. So now they're kind of dying because there's been so much blood loss from both of them, because like he was stabbing her, like not fucking around stabbing her. So mm-hmm. there's been some blood loss and some nastiness. And so now they're dying. And so she's like, okay, well, if I'm going to die anyway, I would really like it if you would cut my arms and legs off. And then I could feel this about like ultimate ecstasy and agony as I'm dying. And as I will orgasm as I'm dying. Like,
because then I won't be able to feel anymore too, because then like you're literally taking the thing that's only thing that's giving me joy is touching you. I won't be able to touch you either. And yeah, I want to die in that orgasm.
I mean, wow.
The real little death. It's a big death. Orgasm.
It is. Simultaneous.
So he's like, he's like, she's like, quarter me. Okay. And he's like, you really, I don't know if I can, but she musters up the energy to go to the kitchen and get the butcher knife and
a big old hammer.
Yeah, big old mallet, big old hammer, and he comes in back with that butcher knife and mallet and
does what she asks. And as she cuts off her limbs, the limbs also fall off the statue that he has made. So we have
we don't actually see the blood and like the actual cut, but we do see the metaphor for it of like the sculpture is her. They're one and the same. So it cuts back to the beginning of like how she could feel everything through that sculpture.
And she's so mm-hmm. into this. She's so happy about this. Like she's like, do the other one, do my legs. Like so happy as she's screaming as well and dying. And so after she dies, he stabs himself in the heart.
He runs himself. He falls on the knife.
He does. And falls on top of her and dies on top of her. And that's the end of the movie. I mean, I cannot tell you, I cannot stress how much this movie blew my mind, because wow. I mean, just the set design alone, the concept is insane. This stuff, I don't think I've ever seen in any movie from any time period. Like, I don't think I've seen a movie go this far at all. And I was like, well, hi, 1969 Japan, fuck. Not fucking around.
It was a journey for first thing in the morning. Ain't gonna lie. What a way to wake up. Then like, with the dark, dank death to envelop them at the end, you know, just like, that was it. That was it.
Wow.
Wow. Movie.
I don't quite know what this movie is trying to say. And I like it, because I don't know what it, like, you know, it's obviously this talking about art and talking about, you know, different types of art. And I appreciate that. I like that he was a dedicated artist. But also, I mean, just death, just sex and death and knife play and bleeding and craziness.
I think I don't know what it was trying to say either, Julia, but I liked it as well.
Okay. All right.
I think it does leave you with those questions of like, what is art? You know, some art is not for everyone, and some, mm-hmm. you know, sexy time play is not for everyone, certain types, yeah. you know what I mean though? And I think there's something about that of just like respecting it, and then, you know, sometimes you don't know what's going to open you up to like your next adventure or whatever yeah. that's going to be. Hopefully you don't end up quartering someone. I hope you don't do that.
That's a little too far.
Might be a little far.
I mean, you do what you like in the bedroom. Anybody's bedroom yeah. business is their own business. So if you're into it, you're into it, and that's fine. But I guess I just feel like in 2021, this movie is so outrageous that I was like, wow. So
must
I can't
have blown
imagine.
Some minds in 69 for sure.
God, can you yeah. imagine?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So thank you to Arrow for recommending this video. You can find it on their streaming service. I recommend it because, man, this movie, you have not seen a movie like this. I guarantee it. It's one of a kind. So Gore Factor, we have Not Enough Blood to Fill a Dixie Cup is 1. 2 is A Puddle of Blood. 3 is Enough Blood to Gross Out the Average Viewer. 4 is A Bathtub of Blood. And 5 is Run for the Barf Bag. So in a movie where we have a lot of knife play and we end with somebody being quartered, very, very little gore. It's a lot of metaphorical gore. It's a lot of hidden, very well done camera work that really all we see is their aftermath of their play. So we see a lot of bruising and lacerations and whatnot. So we gave it a 2, Puddle of Blood. So not yeah, really, they can do really... horror and not a lot of blood. And honestly, yeah. for up until this kind of end bit, I was like, is this a horror movie? Like it doesn't really. And then it got to this and I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's yes. a horror movie, especially then, but it felt like it was more like a psychological thriller mm-hmm. kind of through most of the movie, and just really questioning the mind and like manipulation and what relationship means. What does it mean to be human? what does it to mean to be actually to love? You know, all of that still kind of left a little open-ended even at the end. You're like, was that love or was that just consumption, you know, of each other? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, love that. Movie ratings, chainsaws, one, if you're desperate, two, barely qualifies as a horror film, three, seen worse, seen better, four, not too shabby, five, fantastic oracle. I gave this movie a five. I was floored. I've never seen anything like it. I'm not going to stop thinking about it for a very long time. It's, I would watch it again. I give it a full five.
I did as well. Yeah, I gave it a five as well.
Ding,
it
ding,
really,
ding.
Yeah, it was really something that I've never seen anything like this either. Like I feel like I've seen a lot of movies in my time, and I was like, wow, nope, this one totally new. And that, what a delight, right? Like, you don't get to say that. I mean, so because horror can, one of the faults of horror is it can be very repetitious. It can be very tropey, and you're like,
It's like you watch a rom com, you know, kind of what you're going to get to. I think it's depends on the style, right?
Movies, can be where you know what's going to happen. This one, I'm like, I was like, I got no clue what's going to happen in this movie. It could go any direction. And then the directions it did go, I was like, whoa, didn't see that. Okay.
Did not see this ending coming by a mile. Even though they gave us kind of that, even though they gave us everything in that first scene, and when I was so floored, I was like, oh, they literally told us this in the beginning, but it was like we weren't ready. Like, we weren't ready. We didn't know how we were going to get to that spot. So
next week we're going to talk about a film again that neither one of us has seen. This film is from 1987. It is called Stage Fright, and we are excited to talk about it because as actors, we have been on stage many times, and so we'll see what happens to these actors in this film. Thank you for listening to talk about 69's Blind Beast. We are available on our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, also our Patreon, our Teespring. You can get some mugs, some t-shirts, some tote bags, whatever you want to get from our Teespring. We are there, and we love to hear from you. So please do talk to us anytime. We love recommendations if you have a movie you'd like us to cover.
Yeah, we have a big old running list. We're going to be covering some real soon, so keep a lookout for that. Thank you guys so much, and have a great week. Bye.